sensual, emotional, tough-talking, and one of Hollywood's so-called dangerous dames. Barbara Stanwyck is the subject of this month's edition of Midday on Film with Linda DeLibero and Christopher Llewellyn Reed. Born Ruby Stevens in Brooklyn in 1907, Barbara Stanwyck is now the subject of a new biography by Victoria Wilson, who joins our discussion today. In Hollywood's Hall of Fame, you'll find Betty Davis and Katharine Hepburn, later Ingrid Bergman, Elizabeth Taylor, and Meryl Streep. In AMC's poll of the greatest actresses, Barbara Stanwyck stands in 10th place, described as a lean, live wire with an alluringly husky voice. An appreciation of Barbara Stanwyck, her greatest roles in must-see movies, Midday on Film, after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. The second hour of our show, Midday on Film. Ruby Stevens, better known by her stage name Barbara Stanwyck, was at one point the highest paid woman in the United States. The alluring star of classic films such as Babyface, Double Indemnity, and Meet John Doe captivated American filmgoers with what seemed like effortless performances and a realism that was popular during the Great Depression and World War II. Orphaned at a young age, Barbara Stanwyck got her start on Broadway in the 1920s. She eventually made her way to Hollywood, where she would go on to star in more than 80 films over five decades. She was nominated for four Academy Awards and received an honorary Oscar for superlative creativity and unique contribution to the art of screen acting, that's a quote, in 1982. Today on Midday, an appreciation of Barbara Stanwyck with our Midday film critics, Linda DeLibero and Christopher Llewellyn Reed. Linda, Chris, nice to see you again. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Dan. I love Barbara Stanwyck.
Yeah, right. Me too.
Yeah, me too. What occasions our appreciation? I guess we could do this on our own, but we have there's a new biography out. Victoria Wilson is the author of A Life of Barbara Stanwyck, Steel True, Volume 1, covering Barbara Stanwyck's life from 1907 to 1940. This is the first volume in the definitive biography of the late actress. The book was published in November by Simon & Schuster, and Victoria Wilson joins us today on Midday. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me, and thank you for this great Stanwyck celebration.
Well, this is something, actually, Barbara Stanwyck's been on my list for our appreciation hours with Linda and Chris for a while, because I've always been a big Barbara Stanwyck fan. I'm trying to remember the first time. I think it was Double Indemnity that got me, because she was so dangerous in that film, but so sexy and alluring. But anyway, I need to start off with this, Victoria. What got you into this project? This was you've been working on this for 15 years, if I'm correct, and this is just the first volume.
Well, first of all, I do have a sort of large full-time job,
yeah,
during the day.
I know that.
So it took 15 years because for two reasons. One, because I would write at night and on the weekends. And two, because of the way I ended up writing the book, which was really looking at Stanwyck in the context of her times, in terms of the development of Hollywood, and also in terms of the politics of the time throughout the country, the war. I mean, it was everything.
Victoria Wilson is vice president, senior editor at Knopf, which I meant to say, been there for a long time. Why Barbara Stanwyck, though?
Well, I publish a lot of biography, have published many biographies in cultural history, and I loved working with biographers and discussing their work and their research. And don't ask me why, but one day what popped into my head was, I thought, I love this form. It's an interesting form. It's sort of the relic of the 19th century novel. And with a beginning, a middle, and an end. And so I thought, well, maybe I will write a biography. So I made a list of possible subjects, and I put her on the list. And I started to think about her. And, you know, I'd published a lot of books about film, a lot of biographies of filmmakers. And I realized that there had never really been a serious book about her, and that she had this amazing career. To begin with, as an actress, she could do anything. She didn't know that she could play comedy. I mean, she played very serious intense role. She was famous for the moment where, you know, she would say, get out, and also end up in tears. But she didn't know she could do comedy, actually, until Zeppo Marx told her she could do comedy. He became her agent. So she could do anything. And by the time, you know, by the time this book ends, and she's 33 years old, she has worked with Frank Capra, William Wellman, King Vidor, George Stevens, Ruben Mamoulian, Cecil B. DeMille, Mitchell Lyson, and I'm sure John Cromwell. I've left out a lot of people. But it was a huge career, and it was an important career, and no one had really looked at it carefully.
Victoria, I'm going to defer to Chris and Linda here in a moment for questions for you. I have just a question about the subtitle, if you don't mind, Steel True.
Well, it comes from a Robert Louis Stevenson poem, Steel True and Blade Straight, the great artificer made my mate. And that was the way her second husband, Robert Taylor, would tease her. And he would say that about her. And I thought, you know, I thought about it for a long time. And I thought, it's who she is.
Would you say it again, please?
Steel true and blade straight, the great artificer made my mate. I mean, it's longer than that, but basically, that's where I got the title.
That's the part that matters. Okay, Chris, a question for Victoria.
Absolutely, and that's such a great way to describe Barbara Stanwyck, I must say. So you have this amazing wealth of detail in this book, Victoria. And, you know, we cover Ruby Stevens' transformation into Barbara Stanwyck and into a movie star. And I'm wondering if you could just briefly discuss sort of her change from these rough characters that she played, sort of working class gals and Babyface and Stella Dallas, into a slightly more glamorous movie star with films like Remember the Night, for example, where even though she's a shoplifter, she certainly carries herself as a more glamorous character. And of course, Remember the Night, which you focus on a bit in your book, was written by Preston Sturges, the last film that he ever wrote that someone else directed. It was directed by Mitchell Lyson. And I wonder if you could just talk briefly about that transformation.
Well, it was a transformation that it does take place over a period of time. And it's true that, I mean, in a way, in terms of this book that, as I say, ends in 1940, Stella Dallas is really the pivotal movie that changes everything for her. But there are, I mean, for a number of movies, she's sort of playing this woman of the earth, the purchase price so big. And then she plays, you know, she's a prison moll and a gangster moll. But really what did it was that once she sort of was elevated as a result of Stella Dallas, and she was looked at in Hollywood in a different way, in a new way, and Mitchell Lyson wanted her for a number of pictures, but she was busy, and one time she was making Union Pacific with DeMille. And it was really Mitchell Lyson who was the person who was responsible for glamorizing her. It's one of the reasons why I write so much about Remember the Night, because it's really the picture in which she's never looked more beautiful, even though she's playing a jewel thief. And it was part of Lyson's charm. In a way, you know, MGM had George Cukor and Paramount had Mitchell Lyson. And Lyson was very stylized. He had a very sophisticated eye. Claudette Colbert loved working with him, as did Carol Lombard. And he was drawn to both men and women, and he knew how he wanted women to look. And he'd also, you know, he had been DeMille's art director, set director, second unit director. So he had a very sophisticated eye. And it was really Mitchell Lyson who gave her that with Ted Tasloff as the cameraman.
Linda?
Yes. I was wondering, this is a woman who was quite guarded about her private life. She had a kind of standard line about her childhood. It was very rough, and she didn't say much more about it. And one of the wonders of your book, Victoria, is that you are able to tease out some of the strands of her childhood in particular that have never really been talked about before, separating fact from fiction and some of the stories she told about herself. And I was wondering, that must have been incredibly challenging because there wasn't a desire on her part to talk much about herself unless she was sort of covering up something that had happened to her. How did you proceed to, find the bits and pieces that other biographers hadn't managed to find and put all of this together?
Well, therein lies a tale or two. The thing is that, nobody had really done a serious sort of probing research on her. And, you know, I had some leads but from these other books. But it was really through somebody I published, Jim Curtis, who'd written a book, a biography of W.C. Fields that I published. And he had also done a biography that I didn't publish of Preston Sturges. And I had called him about, once I started to do this, to talk about Sturges, and he had suggested that, you know, he said, well, you have to talk to Walda Mansfield. Now, Walda Mansfield, with Mae Clark and Stanwyck, then Ruby Stevens, made up a trio of showgirls in New York, and they lived together, and they made this pledge to work together. And I did reach out. I did find her, thanks to Jim. And I went to California, and I interviewed her, and she was all there, and she had a fabulous memory. And once I started to talk to her, everything changed, because suddenly she was no longer Barbara Stanwyck, this person on the screen. She became a human being. And I had spoken to Stanwyck's nephew, who Stanwyck had sort of raised, and it was interesting because I had written into the book from what I had pieced together. And then when I spoke to Gene Vaslett, was his name, he said, well, you know, we weren't really that poor. It wasn't really that hard. It wasn't really that tough. And I thought, oh, my God, am I going to have to rewrite this whole thing? And I realized that for him it wasn't, but for her it had been. Because imagine you are 4 years old and your mommy has just died and your father runs off, gets on a freighter and goes to work on the Panama Canal. And you have three older sisters, but they have their own lives and you're sort of moved from place to place. And the thing that interested me, so to finish that off, that was scary. That was horrible. She was alone. She had the only person who she really relied upon was her brother, who was 2 years older. But they were moved from place to place. At a certain point, when I went out to PS 152 in Brooklyn, I went down to the basement. I was given a hard hat. I went down to the basement and looked through the school records. And her brother had gone in, I think by eighth grade, he had been to 14 different schools. And the same had probably been true of her, but somebody had stolen her, as they say, permanent record card.
Victoria Wilson is our guest here in this segment of the show because of her biography of Barbara Stanwyck, A Life of Barbara Stanwyck, Steel True, Volume 1, which covers the actress's life from 1907 to 1940. That's why we're speaking of her childhood here. But we will be talking about her film career, as we do when we have these appreciation shows on Midday on Film. And so one of the things we want our listeners to take away from is some recommendations for films they might not have seen over the years. In our appreciation hours, we mention what we've considered, Chris and Linda anyway, the best films by the artist or the director, whoever we're talking about. Talking about Barbara Stanwyck today, we're going to start in 1933 and listen to our first clip because I want to hear a little bit of Barbara Stanwyck's voice before we take our first break. So Babyface is a film I'm sorry, I haven't seen it. But Chris has always been talking about this film. This is maybe your favorite, Barbara Stanwyck?
No, or? My favorite is probably Double Indemnity.
Okay,
but
that's where I am.
I like Babyface, and it's a pre-code film, pre-production code of 1934. So it's before they started cracking down on what could happen on screen. And Barbara Stanwyck plays Lily, the baby face of the title. She's a young woman who's grown up with a father who's basically using her as a sexual companion for hire for the guests at his tavern. She runs away. Again, this is pre-code. She leaves for the big city, and then she uses her sexual wiles to literally sleep her way to the top. And just before this scene, two of the top executives of the firm that she's been working for have died in a murder-suicide prompted by her loving and then abandoning one of them for the other.
Wow.
And here, exactly,
this
wow.
is heavy.
It's heavy.
This is 1933. Wow.
But here she explains to the board that's called her in how she really doesn't want to sell her story to the newspapers. She's just not that kind of woman. And it's a wonderful showcase of her versatility as an actress and ability to be both vulnerable and hard-nosed and also funny.
I know what the world thinks. Everyone blames me. No one knows the truth. I was all alone here, no family, no friends. I was working hard, earning my own living. And then Baby came.
Baby?
That's what I always called Mr. Carter. I was a victim of circumstance. No one will ever know what I went through. And then this terrible thing. I couldn't believe it had happened. Now I'm disgraced for the rest of my life. There's nothing left for me to do but to go away someplace where nobody knows me and try and start all over again. I don't want to sell this story to the newspapers. I wouldn't hurt anyone for the world. I wish I could tear it up now before anybody reads it, but I can't. I must have money to go away. All I want is a chance to earn an honest living.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen, I think there's only one thing to do. Give Miss Powers a check for $10,000 to turn the story over to us.
Oh, it's $15,000.
That's good, that's good. Victoria, do you want to add anything to that, Babyface?
Well, the thing that I'll add a couple of things. First of all, what's interesting about Babyface that most people don't know and that I discovered is that Babyface was written by Darryl Zanuck with Barbara Stanwyck.
Hmm.
They really developed that together, and they developed the opening is extremely shocking with that father, and that they pushed that together, the two of them working together, they pushed that as much as they could. And what I will also say that most, you know, people talk about Babyface, but there is a movie that I think is even more shocking, and that's a movie called Night Nurse that William Wellman directed her in, and it's mind-boggling. You cannot even believe it because she is this woman who goes to nursing school, and then she gets a job, and she is working with this mother taking care of these two children, and it turns out that the mother and the chauffeur, the chauffeur who was played by Clark Gable and is completely tough and horrendous, is feeding the mother booze, and the mother is completely drunk, and they are starving the children to get the inheritance. And you cannot believe...
Wow.
You cannot believe the intensity of this movie and the insanity of it. And it's really, as far as I'm concerned, it's sort of the bookend to Public Enemy, which Wellman directed just before.
Hmm. Victoria, please stay with us there. Victoria Wilson, her biography of Barbara Stanwyck, out now, A Life of Barbara Stanwyck, Steel True, Volume 1, 1907 to 1940. Now, when we get back after this break here on Midday, we're going to listen to some more clips about Barbara Stanwyck, hear more from Chris Reed and Linda DeLibro about the actress. This is our Barbara Stanwyck Appreciation Hour here on Midday on Film. I have a couple of emails to read. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Midday on Film. Dan Rodericks here with Midday film critics Linda DeLibro and Christopher Llewellyn Reed. And also joining us today, Victoria Wilson, because of her biography of Barbara Stanwyck, the first volume out now, A Life of Barbara Stanwyck. So Linda, I didn't ask you this at the outset. You consider Barbara Stanwyck a great actress. Why? And where does she stand in that, you know, the Hall of Fame of female leads over the many decades that she worked, over the 5 decades that she was an actress? You know, she was there in the era of Katharine Hepburn, Joan Crawford, Betty Davis, later Marilyn Monroe, Elizabeth Taylor. She was around in the 70s and 80s when Meryl Streep emerged as a great actress. They're all in our sort of our top 10 or 12 of actresses, right? And so Barbara Stanwyck, where does she stand in all of that for you? And what do you say about her?
Well, first of all, I would be willing to argue that of all of those great leading ladies of classical Hollywood, she was the greatest actress of all of them. And the more you examine her work, the more you see that she really stands head and shoulders above them in her uncanny naturalness, her ability to transform herself. You can't think of any of those actresses who were capable of playing the huge variety of roles that she played. And the method actors who came after the era, the studio era, or during, right at the very end of the studio era, were working to react against that kind of theatricality and artificiality of the star system. And there were very few Hollywood actors that they really admired publicly, who, you know, they singled out as being models for their own work. Barbara Stanwyck was one of those few. And if you look at her work, and I think this is why she was able to transcend decade after decade of modes and fashions and acting styles, is she is she makes it look effortless. It is obviously not effortless. It requires a great deal of hard work, and she really was the hardest working woman in show business. She never strikes a false note. She does not look as if she's acting. She is not theatrical. She inhabits the part in a way that we're used to seeing today as a kind of benchmark of great acting. And she did it in an era when that was not at all the way to proceed by most of her fellow actresses.
Chris, I'll go to you on this for the man's perspective on Barbara Stanwyck, because it's very, we've talked about this. There's a very definite male view of Barbara Stanwyck. I've talked to many men over the years who appreciate films from the 30s and 40s, and I don't know what it is. I mean, Ingrid Bergman was beautiful, but Barbara Stanwyck was sexy. She was tough. There was something about her voice, too. All of it put together was Barbara Stanwyck.
Well, perhaps yes. it's because, contrary to popular belief, men actually find intelligence sexy.
And that's another part. Yes, absolutely.
I call her Barbara the Brilliant for a reason. I think she's virtually unparalleled in her ability to convey that kind of whip-smart intelligence on screen. And yes, she's, by objective standards, sexy and beautiful. But it's that, for me anyway, tough intelligence that really won me over in the first film I remember seeing her in, Double Indemnity.
Yeah, it's sort of a dangerous intelligence, right? In Double Indemnity. Is an email from Steve in Baltimore. It says, I first had a crush on Barbara Stanwyck when I was about 13 and watching a lot of old movies on television. She had a game attitude. She was sexy, but also tomboyish. Not at all the delicate flower like some of her contemporaries. She used that androgynous appeal to great effect as the madam in Walk on the Wild Side in 1962, and as the no-nonsense but middle-aged sexy matriarch of the Big Valley TV show a few years later. I seem to recall she was often dressed in black, and that certainly worked, and she did that in The Thornbirds, too. Now, I go to Victoria on this, Victoria Wilson, who's written the first part of the biography of Barbara Stanwyck. So getting to review her films for the book in preparation for publishing this book, what did you come to appreciate about Barbara Stanwyck's talent?
Well, I think both Linda and Chris have said it. I mean, the thing about it is that she could do anything. There's only one thing that I've heard that she could not do, and that was Catherine in Wuthering Heights, which she did for Lux Radio Theater. Hmm. She just could not be that woman who would put aside the truth of her emotions for convention. But in everything else, she was completely natural. I mean, I know that Harold Klorman said that she was probably the greatest group theater actress, and of course she didn't have any training of that sort. But what she was natural, and she really connected. When you look at her, you see complexity, you see intelligence, you see you see an intensity, but you also see an honesty. And as she said, thank God, I wasn't beautiful, but thank God I could crack through with honesty. And that's what she does. And she doesn't use, if you compare, for instance, the way she doesn't use sexuality in the way, let's say, that a Joan Crawford did. But underneath everything, there is a sexual sort of, a very sort of evolved sexual presence that comes out. And once she has you, she doesn't let go.
Yeah, I would say that's true. let's listen to another clip. Let's talk about another film. Stella Dallas, another film that we recommend to our listeners if you haven't seen it. This is a must-see Barbara Stanwyck film. And this falls within the time frame of Victoria Wilson's first volume of autobiography. This is 1937. Chris, set this one up for us.
Yeah, so as Victoria said, this is a turning point film for Barbara Stanwyck, and it was made by King Vidor. Stella, a working-class gal out to better herself, falls for Stephen Dallas, a patrician executive down on his luck when they meet, and he falls for her. They get married, have a daughter, and then realize that they have absolutely nothing in common. The years go by. They stay married but live in separate cities and separate worlds, with Stella raising their daughter as a devoted mother, until one day Stephen meets an old flame of his and decides it's time to formalize his separation with Stella. And here, Stella is talking to her husband's lawyer.
Mrs. Dallas, I wrote you a letter, and in it I stated...
You don't have to tell me what you stated. Just tell me what you meant.
Mrs. Dallas, it's only natural to suppose that you should wish to legalize your position.
Legalize my position? Well, I've got our marriage license. Look here, Mr. Morley, what are you trying to give me?
Your freedom. A divorce. Mr. Dallas feels, and I can readily understand why, that you might wish to remarry.
Remarry? Listen, Mr. Morley, let's get down to brass tacks. I haven't the slightest idea of ever remarrying. Now, it don't happen by any chance to be Mr. Dallas who wishes to remarry, does it?
Well, assuming for the moment that it does, surely you could have no objection. Your allowance would be the same. As a matter of fact, Mr. Dallas might even be able to increase the amount he's sending you.
I don't want any increases. Let him keep it and let me keep my daughter.
And that's really the crux of the plot right there, is she is a devoted mother, determined to have only the best for her daughter. And it's a tear-jerking film, because at the end of the movie, she ends up realizing that the daughter would be better off with the father, because he can give her the things that she can't. And she does everything she can to push her daughter away from her so that she'll go live with Mr. Dallas.
I was looking at some photographs of Barbara Stanwyck, and you know, her look is sort of all over the place. There's a zillion photographs of her on the internet that are easy to find. But I had a hard time choosing a few to post on Facebook for our listeners to see. And there's kind of all over the place in terms of the character that comes across. There's some that are very glamorous, some that are quite steamy, revealing sexually. Others that are, just very different than that, very stylized. Others are not. I don't know. It's sort of all over the place. And Victoria, I'm sure you noticed this too when you were looking at all these photographs. Some are quite glamorous. They show her in fabulous clothing too.
Well, I think it's the perfect observation about her, because what she, up until, I mean, at a certain point when she was sort of trapped by the studios and by what she could do, she was playing a certain kind of woman. And then she realized that until she sort of broke out and took a lot of risks, she was going to be dead as an actress. And she really admired character actresses, because they worked all the time and because they weren't restricted by expectations. And that's what you're seeing when you see all of those pictures, because that's why Stella Dallas is such an important picture for her, because nobody wanted to take that part. Nobody wanted to play the part of the mother. And all of the people that Sam Goldwyn wanted to hire, I mean, everybody turned the part down. But she did it because she knew she had to take those risks. And you see that range. And that's what she went for, because she knew she had to take risks as an actress. And she was completely brave. As she said, she was totally brave as long as she was being paid for it.
The next film that we're going to talk about and listen to a clip from is Ball of Fire. This gets us to 1941 and gets us to this photograph that I wish our listeners could see. Yeah, you can find it on my Facebook page. It's Barbara Stanwyck with Gary Cooper, And he's looking her right in the eye, but there's so much more to see in this particular photograph here. I was a little shocked by it, actually, Chris.
Oh, quite a photo. My God. So so this is a film by Howard Hawks. It's a screwball comedy, and Howard Hawks also did Bringing Up Baby, so he had experience doing screwballs. And Stanwyck plays Sugarpuss O'Shea, who's a singer and gangster's moll who is trying to avoid having to testify against her mob boss boyfriend and takes refuge among a group of academics working on an encyclopedia. Gary Cooper.
What? Wait, yeah, wait, yes. This is, you did say screwball comedy.
It is a screwball comedy. Right. So Gary Cooper plays Professor Bertram Potts, whose specialty is language and who's been using Sugarpuss to study modern slang when she takes refuge with them. And here, after her presence has proved too disruptive to the lives of the scholars, Potts asks her to leave. And just a quick special note to explain a topical reference in the clip.
Okay.
Don Ameche played Alexander Graham Bell in the 1939 biopic about the inventor of the telephone.
Okay.
You must leave, Miss O'Shea.
Well, I can't leave now. How about that slang? It's not finished yet.
What?
There's a lot of words we haven't caught up with. For instance, do you know what this means? I'll get you on the Ameche.
No.
Of course you don't. And Ameche is the telephone, on account of he invented it.
Oh, no, he
like,
didn't.
Like, you know, in the movies.
Oh, I see what you mean. They're very interesting. Make no mistake, I shall regret the absence of your keen mind. Unfortunately, it is inseparable from an extremely disturbing body.
All right, I'll go, only don't show. I'll leave sometime tomorrow.
Not tomorrow, right away.
But I tell you, I've got
I insist, Miss O'Shea.
Oh, crabapple Annie. Listen, Potsy.
Crab Apollani. Why, that implies that I'm puritanical and narrow-minded.
Yeah.
I am a perfectly normal man with perfectly normal instincts.
But an awful high boiling point.
Not even that. I, too, have been acutely aware of your presence.
You have?
Twice, to be exact.
Hey, that sounds good. She calls him Potsy. And that reference to the Ameche is pretty funny. So these academics, she's among our lexicographers, right?
Lexicographers.
They're studying language.
Some of them are. Some of them are studying science and some, you know, math.
Okay.
But they're out of touch with the modern world.
Linda, that sounds like a pretty interesting role for Gary Cooper. I didn't expect him to be in a kind of movie like that,
I guess. Well, he's played a kind of hayseed, naive character in several movies, and this was probably epitomizes that. Yeah, he was also with her in Capra's
Meet John Doe.
Meet John Doe, where he certainly plays that same sort of variation on that character. But that little throwaway line where she says, is perfectly indicative of this ease and naturalness with which she could toss off a line and just fill it with all kinds of nuance and make something that would seem on the page to be nothing to be absolutely hilarious.
I caught that. I'm with you, Linda. Thank you. Victoria Wilson, do you want to? No, I want to ask you a question before we take our break. Do you have a favorite Barbara Stanwyck film?
A favorite. Well, I do love Remember the Night. It's not, I mean, I love Double Indemnity. I think Sorry, Wrong Number is a spectacular movie. I think it is an absolutely amazing performance, and it was filmed in chronological order.
That's good.
I don't know.
I'll
think about
those.
This because there are so many that I love.
You can think. We're going to take a short break here. Remember the Night and Sorry, Wrong Number. Of course, we're going to hear from Double Indemnity when we get back here, a clip from that. So a short break here on Midday on Film. Dan Rodericks with Christopher Llewellyn Reed, Linda DeLibero, our Midday film critics, and joining us today by phone, Victoria Wilson, author of A Life of Barbara Stanwyck, Steel True, the first volume out, 1907 to 1940. We'll take a short break, come back and hear some more clips. You know, some of our listeners here would probably know Barbara Stanwyck from TV shows. One was mentioned earlier, The Big Valley and The Thornbirds, which was a TV miniseries, right? In the 1980s. Mm-hmm. What would you say, Chris, 1983?
It was 1983, yeah.
And she's, you know, older than, but still got it. And she's got white hair. Go ahead, Victoria.
By the way, Dan, for that particular series, they insisted on making her look older because she didn't look old enough.
Ah. So, she died, in 1990?
Yeah.
She was born in 1907, so in 1982 or 83, She's in her 70s. Okay.
Right.
She still
and
looks
they
great
put
on a horse.
Prosthesis all over her face.
Yeah. Yeah.
She still looks great on a horse in that series, though.
Like, in Thornburg.
In the Thornburg,
yes.
Yeah,
she does.
Yeah.
Now, she's obsessed with Richard Chamberlain. Richard Chamberlain's obsessed with Rachel Ward, or Rachel Ward's obsessed with Richard Chamberlain, and Brian Brown is obsessed with Rachel Ward, and I was obsessed with Rachel Ward, too.
No,
actually,
Richard Chamberlain is obsessed with God.
Yeah,
that
that's right.
That was the problem.
He was a priest.
That's right.
Right. But anyway, let's jump backwards here to 1941. We'll go back to it's the same year as Ball of Fire. The next clip we have is Lady Eve, and we discussed this before, Linda, didn't we?
That's when we did Preston Sturges.
Yeah. Preston Sturges is the director of this, Chris.
Yeah, so this film was actually released before the film we spent the hour talking about, Sullivan's Travels, but it's one of my favorites. And it's a screwball comedy, again, by Preston Sturges. And in this, Stanwyck plays Gene, a con artist traveling on a cruise ship as part of a trio working the passengers. And she meets Henry Fonda's Charles, a rich heir to a brewing company magnate who's just on his way back from a year researching snakes on the Amazon River. And he fancies himself a man of the world, but he's completely out of his depth when it comes to women and to Stanwyck in particular.
He's a nice fella, your father.
He's a good card player, too.
You think so? Well, I don't want to be rude, but I thought he seemed a little uneven.
He's more uneven sometimes than others.
Well, that's what makes him uneven, of course. But now you, on the other hand, with a little coaching, you could be terrific.
Do you really think so?
Yes, you have a definite nose.
Well, I'm glad you like it. Do you like any of the rest of me?
Oh, what I meant was in a card playing sense.
I know
like
what
it's...
you meant. I was just flirting with you.
Oh.
You're not going to faint, are you?
Who, me? It's that perfume.
Oh.
Do you think they're dancing any place on board?
Don't you think we ought to go to bed?
You're certainly a funny girl for anybody to meet who's just been up the Amazon for a year.
Good thing you weren't up there 2 years.
Oh, that's good
oh,
stuff.
Oh, she's so sexy.
That's
you
good
know,
stuff.
It's amazing. Go when ahead. I listen to this, this is really interesting for me because when you just hear her voice, there is so much range in that voice. It's almost uncanny. The musicality and the depth of the range of that of those sounds.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. And we're going to hear more of their range next when we go to Double Indemnity. I think this is my introduction to Barbara Stanwyck. Chris, you want to talk about this one a little bit? I'd like to hear from Linda on this film, too, but go ahead.
Sure. So this is by director Billy Wilder, and it's written by Wilder and novelist Raymond Chandler. It's a film noir classic. It may in some ways be the film that really kind of starts that style of film. And in it, Stanwyck plays Phyllis Dietrichson, a married woman who decides to use Fred McMurray's Walter Neff, who is a smart insurance man who may not be as smart as he thinks he is, to kill her husband and claim money on a double indemnity accident insurance clause. And here, at the first meeting, with Mr. Dietrichson absent, Neff makes his first flirtatious move, aware, but perhaps not aware enough, of how easily he's being manipulated. It's smart dialogue, delivered masterfully, and it's the second pairing of Stanwyck and McMurray after 1940's Remember the Night.
Would you tell me what's engraved on that anklet?
Just my name.
As, for instance?
Phyllis.
Phyllis, huh? I think I like that.
But you're not sure.
Well, I'd have to drive it around the block a couple of times.
Mr. Neff, why don't you drop by tomorrow evening around 8:30? He'll be in then.
Who?
My husband. You were anxious to talk to him, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, but I'm sort of getting over the idea, if you know what I mean.
There's a speed limit in this state, Mr. Neff. 45 miles an hour.
How fast was I going, officer?
I'd say around 90.
Suppose you get down off your motorcycle and give me a ticket.
Suppose I let you off with a warning this time.
Suppose it doesn't take.
Suppose I have to whack you over the knuckles.
Suppose I bust out crying and put my head in your shoulder.
Suppose you try putting it on my husband's shoulder.
That tears it.
Good stuff.
Great
good
stuff. Stuff. Great stuff.
What do you want to say about this film and recommending it to our listeners who might not have seen Double Indemnity, Linda?
Oh, boy. It's one of the relatively early noirs, so it sets a pattern, and she is the... ultimate femme fatale and also pretty much of a psychopath. again, you see this amazing range. Billy Wilder put her in this god-awful wig throughout the film. And
it's
made
a blonde
her,
wig,
yes,
right?
Yes, very platinum blonde. Mm. And yet she triumphs over her costuming and manages to be both terrifying and yet somehow absolutely riveting, fascinating, and at times vulnerable, which was one of her great acting talents, that she could be as hard as nails, and yet you could see something beneath working there, the hurt and the pain that had caused her to turn out this way. And this is really the femme fatale in all her glory.
Victoria, you want to talk about Double Indemnity a bit?
Well, I think Double Indemnity is interesting because, first of all, it's one of the great perfect scripts of all time, Raymond Chandler and Billy Wilder, and it's a great novel, but it is a perfect script, and she's amazing in it, and also, but it really is also a fabulous movie for Edward G. Robinson. Everybody talks about Stanwyck and her place in this movie. But it's really a fabulous ensemble because Fred McMurray is spectacular, and Edward G. Robinson really, I think, holds the whole thing together.
You know, I remember seeing Fred McMurray in that, and you know, my exposure to Fred McMurray was My Three Sons, a TV show in the 60s. And by the time I got around to seeing Double Indemnity, I didn't expect this. I didn't think he was that good an actor, really. And I saw him as.
Well, I don't think he thought he was that good an actor because he was terrified to take the role, but they got it out of him. But he was a great romantic lead in the 30s.
I think his two best performances are in Billy Wilder films, Double Indemnity and then The Apartment.
Oh, yeah, The Apartment. Let's move on now. We're moving through the decades here a bit with Barbara Stanwyck. This brings us to 1950, a film called The Furies. What's this one, Chris?
Yes, so this is a Western from the great Anthony Mann, and in this, Stanwyck plays Vance, the headstrong daughter of T.C. Jeffords, played by Walter Huston in his last screen appearance. He's a powerful rancher whose vast estate, The Furies, needs a strong managerial hand. Here, T.C. is explaining to Vance what he expects of her as both manager and daughter, and Stanwyck demonstrates her power and range as her Vance fires back her own conditions.
Which leaves who to run the Furies?
Which leaves me.
Can you run it?
Wouldn't speak well for me if I couldn't. It's what you've trained me for, isn't it?
Only one thing can waddle it up.
What's that?
The man you take to husband.
My husband will be my choice, not yours.
Maybe so. Maybe no. See here, here's half the money I got from Anaheim's bank, $50,000.
Good sum.
It's yours for a dowry if you pick a man I could favor. One I could sit down at the table with and not dislodge my chow.
You sound like you'd rather I never married.
You won't have it easy finding a man. I've spoiled most of them for you. You'd want a man like me who'd knuckle on it and know, at least of all you.
You think you're top man on God's green earth, don't you?
You know anyone better?
No, but I'll keep looking, and when I find him, I'll marry him, and I won't care if it does put you off your feet.
Good stuff. This is a sort of setup for The Big Valley and Thornbirds, isn't it?
In some
she's
ways.
She's moving into a managerial role on a ranch. What's that, Victoria?
It's a psychological portrait between, I mean, it's Shakespearean, and she's in love with her father, and in fact, she adored Walter Huston, absolutely adored it, and you can hear it in that scene.
Can we a few notes from her personal life? We touched on her childhood. Of course, this is the first volume of your biography. She was married to Robert Taylor for a time, is that right?
Well, she was married to Frank Fay, who's a very important, though today forgotten, person. But all what I maintain in my book is that all sort of modern comedy comes from Frank Fay. Everybody from George Burns, Milton Berle, Jack Benny, Johnny Carson, all of that came from Frank Fay, who was the sort of quintessential genius monologist and who stripped down all of his affect, told no jokes, and just talked directly to the audience. And between Frank Fay and Arthur Hopkins, who was a great director and producer in the 20s, who was very involved with a sort of naturalist turn in the theater, and Frank Capra, Stanwyck learned how to be, she stripped it down, and that's what we see on the screen. And she was married to Robert Taylor, yes, for 11 years.
The films we're recommending today, we've covered Babyface, Stella Dallas, Ball of Fire, Lady Eve, Double Indemnity, The Furies, and Victoria Wilson, biographer of Barbara Stanwyck, is joining us by phone, mentioned Sorry, Wrong Number, and Remember the Night. And Linda, did you have any to add to that?
To that list?
That's a pretty good list.
That's a pretty good list.
It's a pretty good Barbara Stanwyck starter kit, isn't
it? She did so many movies, and so many of them were great. Or she is great in them, even if the material is not so good. It's pretty hard to find a bad performance from her.
And as we've noted, that she got into TV, The Big Valley, and then the series that we mentioned earlier, The Thornbirds, and we have a clip from that.
Yes, we do. And this, I will say, is one of the first things I ever saw her in because, I was a kid in the 80s, born in 1969. It's one of her last roles. And she plays Mary Carson, a powerful Australian rancher who, in her final years, is developing a strong attraction to Richard Chamberlain, who plays Ralph de Bricassar, a Catholic priest banished to the outback for prideful behavior. And she's consistently dangling the prize of bequeathing her estate to the Catholic Church as a way of freeing him from his exile. And he valiantly resists her advances. But in this scene, he's naked on her porch, drying himself off from the rain, and she approaches and literally begins stroking his torso. And she's still quite striking and powerful, even at 75.
You are the most beautiful man I have ever seen, Ralph de Bricassar. But of course you already know that. Curious how you view us mortals with contempt for admiring that beauty. And yet, you would use it without compunction to get whatever you wanted, wouldn't you?
I thought it was my soul you were after, Mary.
It is. Because at my age, officially, I'm supposed to be beyond the drives of my body. And one mustn't expect miracles, even from you.
Wow, Barbara's Stanwyck.
She takes that material, which is pretty soapy.
It
and
is.
She turns it into something that is significant, you know. It's,
yeah.
It's really remarkable.
Yeah. She's scratching at the chest of Richard Chamberlain.
This woman aged better than any Hollywood actress I can think of. She really looked, the older she got, the more beautiful she got.
And as Victoria noted, they actually, you say they had to make her look older than she looked.
Yep.
For
and
that
she
part.
She was not happy about
Thornbirds.
That.
Yeah. An email came in from Dee who said, I once heard a group of paparazzi discuss their trade while describing their various encounters and misadventures with various Hollywood stars. They praised Barbara Stanwyck unanimously for her unfailing grace in dealing with photographers. Does that ring true to you, Victoria?
Well, it did. When I interviewed people, when I would interview her colleagues, I would say, all right, I'm only giving you one request. Please don't use the word professional, because that's all anyone said. I said, use any other words. Because everybody, and she was so professional, she knew her line, she was there, she waited. I would tell a lot of stories about how she knew that, you know, the director may have dismissed her, and she stayed in makeup and costume because she knew he would use her hours later. She knew everybody's lines. And I interviewed Nancy Reagan, who plays a scene with her in East Side, West Side, which is also a wonderful movie to watch. Not a great movie, but fun to watch her in it. And what Nancy Reagan said is what everybody says. You rose to her level. And it was like a tennis match, and you played better because of Stanwyck.
Victoria Wilson is the author of A Life of Barbara Stanwyck, Steel True, Volume 1, 1907 to 1940. What's the word on Volume 2, Victoria?
I'm going back to work.
Okay. Well, thank you for being with us today. I enjoyed having you with us.
Thank you so much, yep. For everybody.
Thank you, Dan.
Chris, and Linda. It was great to hear you all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Victoria. Thank you, Dan.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Chris, for providing us with the clips today and the setup for all that. And Linda DeLibro, we thank you for being with us, too. Christopher Llewellyn Reed and Linda DeLibero join us once a month here for Midday on Film, always the first Friday of the month. Thank you both. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, you too.
All right, folks, thank you for tuning in. Dan Roderick's here for our staff on Midday. Have a great weekend. I'll see you again on Monday.
Midday's senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer and director is Jonathan Ahrens. The associate producer, Michael Hemowitz. Our interns are Luke Spicknell, James Daly, Tom Cartaxo, and Michelle Richardson. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.